Hi, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of a Trophy Life Podcast. I'm your host, Bob Rathbun, and over the next 20 or 30 minutes or so, we'll be talking about the latest in college basketball. Our guest this week is none other than Andy Katz. We'll talk with Andy about the state of the college game and his picks for the Citizen Naismith Player of the Year Award at this stage of the college season, plus news and notes, a little bit of trivia for you, all coming up on this week's podcast. Today's podcast is brought to you by Homrick Berg, one of the largest and oldest independent fee-only wealth management firms in Atlanta. Check out homrickberg.com to learn more about how HB has been helping families protect, grow, and manage their wealth since 1989. Well, we are knee-deep in conference basketball college play, both on the men's and the women's side. We have a huge week ahead. We want to start with our Citizen news and notes of the week, and from the club, we want to say that this week we are announcing the 15 midseason candidates for the Naismith Defensive Player of the Year Award, and you can check all of that out, of course, online at naismithtrophy.com. Citizen, title sponsor of the Citizen Naismith Trophy for College Player of the Year, is sending one lucky winner and a guest to the NCAA Championship Weekend in April 2020 with tickets to the semifinal and championship games, a Citizen Naismith watch, and invitations to hospitality events. Try your luck today and enter to win the Citizen Slam Dunk Sweepstakes by visiting citizenwatch.com/US/EN/Naismith. Winner will be chosen once the sweepstakes concludes on March 22, 2020. Limit one entry per person. Must be a U.S. resident. And I want to remind you that here on the podcast, we also have contained a link, and you can click on that and enter as well. A lot of great games coming up this week. Wednesday on the men's side, number 24 Rutgers, freshly into the top 25 for the first time in years. They'll be at number 19 Iowa. And then on the weekend, two big ones on the men's side. It'll be Kentucky and Texas Tech in Lubbock in the SEC Big 12 Challenge. And Sunday, a huge game out west as number 4 Oregon goes to number 7 Oregon State. And speaking of trivia, a little did you know from the Citizen's Naismith Women's winners, there have been 5 Citizen Naismith Trophy winners inducted into the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame. Do you know who they are? Now, the list began back in 1995 with Ann Donovan, continued to Cheryl Miller in 1999, Dawn Staley, who will be a future guest on the podcast in 2013, Lisa Leslie in 2015, and Cheryl Swoops in 2016. Speaking of the South Carolina women, they are the new number one team in the country, won at the buzzer last Monday night, and I'm sure Dawn Staley was sweating bullets over that one. It was a big win over Mississippi State. Next week on the podcast, we'll have Debbie Antonelli with us. She called that game, and we'll talk more about that then. But coming up next, we'll hear from Andy Katz, so stay tuned for that interview as the A Trophy Life podcast continues.
Well, it's an absolute thrill for me and for those of us here at the Trophy Life Podcast and the Naismith Awards to welcome Andy Katz to our program and to our podcast. Andy, of course, so well known in college basketball circles for many years, hosts his own podcast, March Madness 365, which if you do not subscribe, you are not a real college basketball fan. On the air at Fox Sports, FS1, NCAA.com, Turner Sports. All of the, but did I leave anybody out? Big Ten Network. I mean, he's got a lot of checks coming in. Andy, thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you. Yes, it's funny how life works out. I was at ESPN for 18 years, and then suddenly you're with more networks than you can count on.
When we enjoy you on all of them. Before we start talking about college basketball, I got to ask you about your love affair with the college game and how it began growing up. In Massachusetts, you went to Wisconsin. We know that from your bio, but how did you get bitten by the basketball bug at an early age?
So I grew up in Newton, Mass. My dad was a professor at Boston College from 1968 until just about 4 years ago. And basically, you know, so since I grew up in the 80s, dating myself, but I grew up in the 80s, the early 80s to the, you know, in college in the late 80s. And so I was there during, you know, the great Celtics teams of that era. And that certainly hooked me on the sport without question, being in Boston and the Bird era and the championships and the Lakers and all that against them in many years. So that was the basketball bug. And then, you know, it's funny, it's a different era of camp, but, you know, in that era, so I obviously used to go to the BC basketball camp every year because my dad was there, so we'd get, you know, free camp and all that. And, you know, I always remember that in that time period, you had Jim Calhoun at Northeastern, you had Rick Pitino at BU, there was Tom Davis, Gary Williams combo over my tenure, you know, at BC. You know, they used to go and lecture at each other's camps. So I remember sitting there you know, hearing Jim Calhoun and hearing Rick Pitino and obviously Tom Davis, Gary Williams, and they'd have other people come through. You know, I watched Patrick Ewing is the same age as my brother. Now, my brother didn't play basketball, but it's the same conference, Cambridge Region Latin with Newton North. And so, like, I watched Patrick Ewing in high school. And so all these kinds of things, you know, in that era, because it was a great time for basketball in the Northeast, you know, the Big East had already started, you know, but it was in really its heyday in the mid-'80s. So all that got me hooked. And you know, I've been hooked ever since.
And I assume that reading Bob Ryan and Jackie McMullen and Peter,
yes,
you know, those are your early writing mentors.
Yeah, I mean, the Boston Globe was my dream. You know, it wasn't ESPN. It was to work at the Boston Globe. The closest I ever got in terms of there, I once had a summer internship at the Patriot Ledger, which is north of Boston in Quincy. And, you know, one summer that was in college where I actually went and covered things like at Fenway Park and all that. That was like, it blew my mind. But my goal was to work at the Boston Globe. You know, and even though ESPN, you know, was, you know, started in 79 and it was obviously starting to boom, that wasn't my initial end game. It ultimately, you know, I thought it would be, and that's what I wanted, obviously, when I went west for newspapers. But, you know, then my the love affair with college basketball continued, obviously, when I went out west. And, you know, one of my, I would say, you know, closer coaching friends, over my time when I covered the WAC for many years, you know, was the late Rick Majerus. And we used to talk, you know, late into the night. Even when I was married, I would talk to him, you know, late into the night because he would call me at all hours. And when I'd go to the games in Salt Lake, go out to eat, obviously, after, and summer recruiting, and hang out. And, you know, I just learned a lot from him, talking to him, and then networking through him and connecting people and, you know, obviously the TARC era and all that just sort of kept steamrolling into making more contacts and building more relationships. And, you know, I mean, one of my best relationships to this day is actually with Mark Few, which it's funny how opportunistic things are. I can pinpoint just a very quick sidebar story for you. So the March of 1999, was the beginning of the Gonzaga era, if you will, the modern era. And that was in Seattle. And I was at the Fresno Bee covering TARC, and ESPN Sports Zone at the time, this is pre.com, was actually operated out of Seattle because it was a connection with, you know, Microsoft and all that. And so I requested to go to the Seattle Regional so that I could also interview at ESPN Sports Zone. Little, you know, half truth of one of the reasons I requested that regional. And I ended up interviewing in Seattle. That's the regional where Gonzaga begins their run. I then follow them to Phoenix, where they lose in the Elite Eight to UConn. Mark's using assistant. And I just, you know, kept in touch from then, and, you know, 20 years later, look what they've done. I feel like I've had a pretty good run as well. And so, you know, it's interesting how all these things, you know, end up working out. I end up obviously getting the ESPN job the following September, moving east in November of 99. So it all sort of funny how it all sort of comes full circle at times.
Isn't it? It's crazy. Well, speaking of crazy, this college basketball season is certainly that. You do a Power 36 every week, and I think all of us that do polls like this and vote have to do it in pencil this year. This is nuts what's going on. You've got Baylor, Gonzaga, San Diego State 1-2-3 this week. Not exactly blue blood heaven. It's a different time in college basketball in 2020.
Yeah, it is. And you know, what that means is we're going to get, I think of March, it's going to be like this season. Incredibly unpredictable. I challenge anyone to get a pretty good bracket this March. It's going to all be guesswork. And that's okay. The seeding is going to be very difficult for the selection committee. I don't think the selections will, because even for me, when I've done brackets this season or polls, when you get back, you know, toward the back end, you're really comparing a lot of teams that are just sort of eh. And, you know, you could pick any of them. They all look sort of, you know, just all flawed. So I don't see, you know, yes, there's always complaining, but I don't think they'll have a big case on the back end. The seeding, it's going to be very hard to differentiate really from probably 3 or 4 to 10 because it can fluctuate so many different ways. I mean, you know, like a month ago, Ohio State could be a 1. Now, you know, they're pushing double digits, but it's the same team. They're just not playing well. So, I mean, you know, that's what we're going to see with a lot of those teams. And yes, I would challenge you on one thing. To me, Gonzaga is a blue blood now. I mean, they have blue in their colors. I mean, they are consistently now a team that is going to be up for a top four line seed every year. It's just who they are now. It's in their DNA. And it, much like Villanova, you know, has crossed over that threshold and become that. You know, you could argue that UCLA considered that, Indiana considered that, and they're on the outside looking in terms of an elite program at this moment in time. Doesn't mean they can't still be. But Gonzaga and Villanova, to me, are up there with the best of the best.
Andy, is there enough meat on the bone here in mid-January to look into the crystal ball and say that the field will be dominated by a couple of conferences? Big Ten, Big East come to mind for me.
Well, certainly in terms of number of bids, that's without question. Big Ten, you know, I did a bracket last week, and I know it's crazy that I had 12 of the 14 in. I wasn't the only one that did that. But in this moment in time, 12 deserve it. A conference that you know very well, the ACC, you know, I struggled to put 4 in. You know, to me, there's only 3 that I can say unequivocally will be in Florida State, Louisville, and Duke. You know, will they get more in? Sure, they should, but there's some work to do. But, you know, whereas the Big Ten, I don't think they'll get 12. Could they get 10, 8 to 10? Sure, relative to the rest of the country. So, and the SEC is not as strong as it was the last 2 years. So, I mean, yes, I think the Big East and Big Ten will dominate number of bids percentage-wise. But, you know, Gonzaga could win it all out of the WCC. The Big 12 has at least, I think, 3 candidates that could get to the Final Four. You know, not certainly Texas Tech can get there, but, you know, certainly Kansas, Baylor, and West Virginia have proven that they can play with any team in the country right now. So other leagues, you know, will have Final Four candidates. But the depth will lie in the Big Ten and the Big East.
We have, of course, our Citizen Naismith Player of the Year watch list, and we're keeping an eye on all these guys. I wanted to touch on a couple of kids and a couple of great stories that make up the college season. And I want to start with Cassius Winston, who Friday night became the Big Ten's all-time assist record holder and beat Mateen Cleaves, of all people, to go to the number one spot in that particular statistic. But, Andy, go back for those who may have overlooked early November the personal tragedy of Cassius losing his brother and what this year has meant to him.
Well, none of us can be in his head. Everyone grieves differently. You know, when anything like this happens and you have to grieve publicly, you know, it's hard to imagine what an individual goes through, especially, you know, he's not a bench player. He's not someone deep on that. I mean, he's out there all the time, and he's the face of the program right now, you know, below Tom Izzo. So, you know, I can't imagine what he's been going through. It was very public how Zachary died, very tragic, obviously. And, you know, the fact that he played right away, you know, there's some games his family could come to, some games it was too hard for them. And I'll be honest, like, I'm giving them a pass for their earlier losses. Not their loss to Purdue last week. That was bad. And, you know, that was inexcusable. But, you know, Virginia Tech, Duke, I was at the Duke game. He just wasn't there. He was there physically. He wasn't there. And I don't blame him. I don't, you know, they just weren't right. And that's okay. Like, that's life. That's human nature. And so, to me, Michigan State can still be there, can still win a national championship. He can still win the Naismith Award. You know, he's got a lot of competition in his league, and we can get to that in a second. But and there's an actual scenario in my head where he could win the National Player of the Year, not the Big Ten Player of the Year. So, you know, he's had a remarkable season based on the circumstances in his personal life that, you know, are hard to even fathom.
One other guy I wanted to ask you about quickly, and you can talk about his team as well, and that's Miles Powell at Seton Hall. I read this morning, and I had to do a double take, Seton Hall has not had a first-team All-America since Walter Dukes in 1953. Is that possible? And this guy is tearing it up.
Well, if that's possible, you know, and I didn't know that, it's going to definitely end with this streak because he's going to be a first-team All-American. And I would say, as we are taping right now, he's my pick. Now, that'll change. It could change. But, and I've got sort of a group of six that I think are the top six in contention. I think we've whittled it down. I'm not saying it's the only six, but it's right now where I'm feeling it. And we just now discussed two of them. But Powell, to me, is number one. He is such a tremendous leader. Even in their losses, you know, he's been phenomenal. The game against Michigan State at home, Oregon in the Battle for Atlantis. He didn't play in their win over Maryland because he was hurt. You know, he's had two things going on. He's had concussion-like symptoms that happened in their loss to Rutgers where he was out early in that game. And then he had an ankle injury. So, but he's shown great leadership. And in fact, I was doing a post game on Fox a couple Sundays ago, and or Saturday, one of the days, and we were doing a post game interview with him. And he insisted on handing the headset to Romero Gill because Gill had a great job, had done a great job blocking shots, finishing, and wanted to make sure that he got his due. And you don't see that too often, where he made sure he stand next to him. I was interviewing him live, and he, like, took the headset and put it on Gill to make sure Gill could, you know, get some recognition. Tremendous leader, and he's a big shot maker. He embraces it. I think they got a great shot to get to the Final Four for the first time since 89.
So you mentioned Winston, you mentioned Powell. Who are your other four?
So the other two were players I don't think anyone had at the beginning of the season, or the next two, I should say. Obi Toppin from Dayton, who has been phenomenal. He's going to be a top 10 pick. Dayton's losses were at the buzzer to Colorado and an overtime to Kansas. He's a highlight reel. He's a humble kid. I've interviewed him as well, really enjoyed talking to him. So I think he's right there. And then Luka Garza. I mean, he's averaging like 22 and 10, double-double machine. Without him, I was not even remotely close to being a tournament team. Jordan Bohannon, their best guard, is out for the year after having hip surgery. And Garza, I mean, just has improved his game exponentially over the last 2 years and has been such a force, really just a joy to watch. And, you know, that's my scenario where he could win Big Ten Player of the Year. And then depending upon, you know, the Naismith voting and all that, and what, you know, if Michigan State's a one seed or two seed or, you know, what happens, like Winston still could win the Naismith Award. I mean, I could see a scenario like that. The other two players that are in my top six in some order are Peyton Pritchard from Oregon, who has not received the national love he deserves, basically won two games already this season, home Arizona and then at Washington. He's a gamer. He's playing essentially with a new team at Oregon, and they're right there to win the Pac-12. And then the other one is Marcus Howard from Marquette. Leading scorer, 28 points a game. You know, Marquette wouldn't even be remotely close to the tournament without him. The thing with him, of course, is I think it'll be hard for him to win the award if they're just sort of a bubble team, you know, and just sort of eking in, which I think they will. But he certainly is a worthy candidate, either first or high second-team All-American.
We will keep close watch on those young men as the season goes on. Andy, we could talk all day. Thank you so much. You've been so gracious with your time. We just love watching you and learning from you, and thanks for being such a good friend to the Naismith. And we'll see you in Atlanta. You were quite the resident during March Madness, of course, working the studio at Turner. So we feel like you're one of ours, and appreciate all your time, and thanks so much.
Appreciate it. Just don't make sure you tell the tax collector if I'm spending that much time in the state of Georgia.
Andy, thank you very much. That was great. Coming up next week, Debbie Antonelli will bring us up to date on the women's game. We'll get her thoughts on the Citizen Naismith Women's Player of the Year, some of the leading candidates so far in the college season, what she's seen on the college horizon, and get all up to date on the women's side. That's with my dear friend Debbie Antonelli. That's coming up next week. Thanks for joining us. Have a great week.